Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The NCAA tournament field has been announced. And now it's a chance to put the brackets together, but of course, I'm sure for Kevin, the issue here is that the, quote, little guy probably didn't get enough consideration.
Now, I'm sure we'll have to talk to Kevin when he gets back here.
Well, where'd he go this time?
Well, your guess is as good as mine.
Oh, well, it's great to be with you.
Well, it's good to be with you as well.
I know that there's going to be some point where we'll talk more about this. But you're going to be greatly missed, I think, you know, around here very, very much.
Well, thank you so much. I will miss it.
There are a lot of, it's personal reasons and so forth, that go into this, but you are, and obviously we get into this more next month, a great professional. I mean, in the truest sense of the word of being a professional, that is what you are. You are a pro's pro. I love working with people who are a pro's pro and always have. And you make any place that you are better. And that's what I admire about you. So I'll obviously get into this a little bit more later, but I just wanted to pass that along to you. It's really the first chance I've had to talk to you since you decided to.
Well, yes.
Since you decided to put, you know, the foot down and tell Kevin I don't want to work with you anymore.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate it.
Well, let's get to the tournament itself. Let's talk first of all about Murray State. Murray State is not only not in the tournament, they aren't even close to being in the tournament. It's and in fact, I don't even think it would even be something where I'm sitting down and considering it. Dick Vitale can discuss all he wants about the little guy being left out, and look how many games in a row they won. But Murray State has a problem that is not theirs, and then at the same time they have a big problem that is theirs. Let's start with the problem that is not Murray State's problem. What is not Murray State's problem is this. People don't really want to schedule them. And let's face it, you have very passionate fan bases. I don't care whether it's a passionate fan base that's at Soica for Bucknell, and they've got their opener coming up with Temple on the horizon in the NIT, which will be a heck of a game, I think. But I don't care if you're playing, if you're Murray State, if you're playing Penn State, for example. You're going to have passionate fan bases anywhere. People that are deeply ingrained in basketball that want to go see Temple, want to go see Bucknell, want to go see Pitt, want to go see Penn State, that are deeply ingrained fan bases that love college basketball, and they know the ins and the outs, and they're going through these tournament brackets right now, and they're probably overthinking it because of how much they do know, which is fine because they love the game. So they know who's good and who isn't. All right, so playing Murray State would be like, hey, that's a good game. Unfortunately, that is not what makes up the vast majority of a fan base. The vast majority of a fan base is made up of casual fans. So if Penn State, for example, were to schedule Georgia Tech, Texas Tech, they'd recognize them right away and go, hey, they play football, right? Right. So it's like, okay, you know, they're bringing in a big school, Texas Tech, Georgia Tech, you know, Washington State, somebody. You bring in Murray State, and you're like, what are they playing Murray State for? Why are they playing them? I don't understand that. So that if you beat Murray State when you play them, you really don't, from your own fan base, get a lot of credit for doing it. If you lose to them, it's a disaster of major epic proportions. How can you lose to Murray State? So that's the issue that Murray State has off the top, is that a lot of people don't want to schedule them for the reason I just talked about. Indiana doesn't want to schedule Murray State, for example, for the same reason. As passionate as the Indiana fan base is, that's still made up of a lot of people who just love Indiana basketball, and they sit back and go, why are you playing Murray State? I don't understand that. Eastern Washington, for example, is a really good team. They made the tournament field this year. They beat Montana at Dahlberg to get into the NCAA tournament. That's impressive. Well, Eastern Washington won at Indiana, and there are a lot of people at Indiana saying, what the heck, how did they lose to that team? Yet they're actually a very good team. So that's one issue. Now let's go to the other part. Here's the part that is Murray State's fault. That first part is not Murray State's fault. You can try as hard as you can. If people don't want to schedule you, it becomes an issue. Now here is Murray State's fault. Okay, in the games that they could have done something, they did nothing. They played Xavier and Valparaiso, two NCAA tournament teams. Do you want to know by how many points they lost by in those two games? Let's try 52. They were blown out and uncompetitive against Valpo, and they were blown out and uncompetitive against Xavier. They lost by a total of 52 points in the two games. Their other major name on their preseason schedule was Houston. They lost that game too, and Houston's nowhere near a tournament. So Murray State, not even close to getting into this thing, because once they start the conference isn't good enough. Belmont's been in the NCAA tournament a lot recently, so people know them. They did beat Belmont twice in the regular season, but in the conference championship game, they lost. But again, in the part that they could, the part they can't control is that people won't schedule them. The part they could control, Valpo and Xavier, two NCAA tournament teams, they not only beat Murray State, they bludgeoned Murray State. So, zero consideration, way out of the tournament. Now let's get to UCLA and Texas. I thought Temple would get in. The fact that Wyoming won and then got into the tournament, Wyoming was not going to be in the tournament until they won the Mountain West. They bumped Temple out. UConn would have bumped somebody else out, too. I think it was Dayton. I think if UConn won, they would have bumped Dayton out if they'd won yesterday against SMU. The only two teams that I look at that I think should be in that aren't in are Temple, emphatically, and Colorado State. Especially Temple now. They've got all their people back. And Colorado State. Colorado State has some really good wins this year. Wins against the field. Won 27 games. Now, Larry Eustace may not be the poster child for, hey, we do everything right here, based on his career. But he's also a really, really good basketball coach. And they didn't make it. I thought they should have made it. UCLA and Texas are the two I look at and go, really? Really? Yet here's the odd thing. Vegas has Texas a favorite as an 11. The next part is that needs to be tweaked in all of this is the first four. They have a rule in the first four is that when you have those four 11 seeds playing each other, they can't be automatic bids. They have to be four at-large teams. In other words, the four teams considered to be the last four in. How absurd is that? You want the last four teams in? Wyoming should be the one that's wearing dark jerseys the entire time because they were the last team in with an automatic bid. Nobody won their way into the tournament yesterday. Nobody. The only team that won its way into the tournament that didn't have a bid before that would have been considered on the at-large line was Wyoming. Wyoming won the Mountain West. Wyoming should be playing in a first four game. They shouldn't be, you know, because they got an automatic bid by winning the conference tournament, they shouldn't get a bye into the next round. They didn't earn it. And if UConn had won, UConn also would have had a bye. They would not have played in the first four either because they would have had the automatic bid for the American. They would have bumped Dayton out, and they think UCLA would have taken Dayton's spot in the first four at Dayton. But that rule has to change too. Okay? The last four teams on your board from 12 up have to be the ones that are playing in that game in Dayton. And you can't just let it on, like Wyoming, automatic bid. Wyoming is seated behind these teams. From a really good conference. From the Mountain West. They should be playing in Dayton. I thought UCLA should have been playing in Dayton, and I also thought Texas should have been too. What's interesting is the first one that came up that raised my eyebrows about where everybody that where I can tell you when I knew UCLA and Texas were going to make it was when I saw Indiana get in as a 10, which meant Indiana was not only in, they were way in. Other than that, I have no qualms really whatsoever with what the tournament committee did. The only two I have any qualms with would be Texas-UCLA versus Colorado State-Temple. Now, Temple does have an issue. 14 of their wins, they're 14-0 against teams 200 to 351. All right, that is an issue. But they beat Kansas by 20 points. You're going to get these kind of arguments every year. For the most part, the tournament committee did fine. I'm not sure why Georgetown is seated as high as they're seated, but that's fine. But as for competing with teams, for example, take Buffalo. Bobby Hurley brings Buffalo into Penn State. You're going to go, they're playing Buffalo. Buffalo's a good team. Can you convince your own fans of that? No, it's not easy. That's why the Murray States of the world do it. That's something they can't control. What they could control, they were bad at. Xavier and Valpo both made the tournament. They combined to beat them by 52 points. Not a small margin. Two uncompetitive games that they needed to be competitive in. Come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, Penn State basketball obviously made a great run at the end of the year. I know Justin on Facebook. Whoops. Fortunately, I knocked that one out. Justin on Facebook sent a message about Newbill getting snubbed. And it dealt with first team All Big Ten. Penn State haters, coaches also disappointed, and the player of the year voting is a joke, always has been. Well, for one thing, I vote on that, and I don't think what I do is a joke. Let's start with that. I think the big mistake that is made by people, and this is a mistake I don't think I make, is that I don't put stock on where people finish as to how I vote. I look at each player individually. So even though we're not really supposed to reveal the ballot, I'll at least tell you I did put Newbill on first team. And it was an easy choice. I also put Des Wells on first team as well from Maryland. And he was second team, I think, by the media. Like, okay, all right. And then Kaminsky, player of the year. Kaminsky's an easy call to be player of the year because I'm going to vote him national player of the year on the wooden ballot that I get. There are very few players inside and out that play the game that he does at 6'11". where you can pop out and hit a three, the way the quickness on the drop step to the bucket, play with your back to the basket, you know, the different moves he has, whether it's a step back, whether it's a hook shot, whether it happens to be a fadeaway. He's a very good passer. He has also become a very good defender. He is really as tough a guard as there is in the country, because he will take you outside as a big man, and then he can post you up, and then he creates mismatches. And Kaminsky, I think, was an easy one. I think there's too many people that put stock in the fact that Penn State finished 13th and they stuck him there. That's not how you should be voting. You should be sitting there and voting on the individual player. Who do you think are the five best players in the league? I think when it came to DJ Newbill, that criterion of who are the best five was not the criterion. A lot of it had to do with where did you finish. I don't think that's right. I don't think that's fair. Now, as for, you know, and he mentioned Sam Decker in this. I put Decker on second team. And here's the reason I put Decker on second team. Decker has all the tools, I think, to dominate any game at 6'10". Outside shot, speed, runs to the rim, the whole deal. Yet I feel like he picks his spots during the course of games, while Kaminsky does not. And that's the big reason why. And I felt Decker was one of the top seven players in the conference. Now, I don't get too hung up in voting player of the year and things like that. You know, it's obviously just an opinion. But I try to put a lot of thought and research into it before I make a vote. I don't just sit down and go, hey. The toughest one I have to vote for every year, easily, is when the Big Ten asked me to vote for Lineman of the Year, because I spent my time following the ball.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Story tomorrow about filling the pool. Might I suggest water?
I'll pass that along to them.
All right. I don't want to make this too complicated, Sarah.
Let's just see it as a good thing that maybe warm weather is on the way.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I understand that, but I mean,
water. It's the key.
I mean, that would seem to me. Now, I realize that my solution would shorten the show dramatically.
Right. So, we're stretching, Steve. Stretch.
So I'm sure there's some complicated answer I don't know about. Water would be good. I mean, a faucet and a hose. We're done. I'm sure it's more complicated than that. All right. NCAA tournament. We're going to get to Chris Daubertine a little bit later in the show from bloggingthebrackets.com to talk about this. The number one overall seed is Kentucky. Now, let's get to something that's interesting. There's obviously a lot of money bet on the tournament. Not just a little, a lot. And the number is, I mean, I don't care whether you're doing friendly brackets for a few dollars or whatever. The money is a lot. Now, Sarah, do you do a, quote, friendly bracket?
I do.
All right. So most people, I think, do this, where it's a friendly bracket, and they get into a pool, they have a little bit of fun with it, and they go from there. And it obviously increases your interest in the tournament and the whole deal, because now you feel like you have a stake and a vested interest in it. I got it. But there's also tens of millions of dollars that are bet on this tournament through Vegas. And I think it's very interesting that what Vegas thinks of this tournament. They have, now again, This is not Vegas predicting the tournament. Remember, they're setting odds on who's going to win each game in the opening round. They only have two teams that are a lower seed that are favorites in their game against a higher seed. Those two are Texas, a favorite over Butler, and Ohio State, a favorite over VCU. Those are the only lower seeds that are favored in the opening round over higher seeds by Vegas. And those guys, for some reason, I have no idea, just seem to know. All right, let's get it to Chris Dobberzine, bloggingthebrackets.com. Chris, how you been, man?
It's been a busy day, Steve. It's been a little bit hectic here, but glad to be on with you.
It's great that you carved out a few minutes for us. Any surprises to you as to how this played out?
Last night was just probably the most inexplicable selection show that I think I've ever sat through. Starting off, of course, with UCLA getting in, which barely, I don't think anybody got UCLA. The 120 some people that do bracketology, I don't think anybody got UCLA or even had them really on the radar. Kind of like NC State last year, though, they, you know, were even the bigger surprise than the Wolfpack were, because the Wolfpack had some things there. And then, you know, listening to the explanation for it, we had the revelation that the old eye test was kind of back, when we were always told that, you know, the eye test and the finishing kick, the last 10 or last 12 games didn't really matter. And then, of course, you actually look at kind of what UCLA did over those last 12 games, and they actually did go 8-4, which that's respectable. They beat Oregon at home and won at Stanford, which, you know, good enough. But a lot of those games were, you know, losing at California, losing to Arizona State, games against Washington, two against Southern Cal, one against Washington State, and, you know, an Oregon State game in there too. So really kind of the, you know, the middle to the bottom of the Pac-12, and you're kind of wondering, you know, what is that, you know, strong finishing kick really going to be? Dayton playing at home in the opening round is another big shocker, which, and then finding out that if UConn had defeated SMU, that Dayton would have been out. When Dayton has an RPI, you know, in the top 30, 28th, that would have been the biggest team left out since Air Force was left out in 2007 with a round of 30. I mean, then Hofstra the year before in 2006 with a similar number, completely unexpected. And then, of course, Colorado State and Temple being left out as well. Those were my two big surprises, and I thought those two teams were pretty safely in, especially Colorado State.
Yeah, and Temple was another one I looked at. I mean, they took apart Kansas. Now, I know Temple's 14-0 against 200 to 351, Chris.
Yeah.
Temple and Colorado State were the two I thought that should be in. I had Texas and UCLA out.
And then Temple, being at, their two worst losses were when their entire roster was not in place. They were still waiting on a couple guys to get eligible, and they started to play a lot better when they had their full team after the end of the first semester. Texas, kind of like, and that kind of brings up the topic of another surprise, which is why Georgetown ended up getting a 4 seed. And looking back on it, I kind of think if Georgetown ended up getting a 4, they have a very similar record against the top 50 compared to Texas. Georgetown was 4-10 against the top 50 with no bad losses. Texas ends up being 3-12 against the top 50, with their worst loss being Stanford, who's 52nd. So you kind of have to sit there and wonder, why did Georgetown end up getting a 4 seed?
Right.
I actually did a pair of comparison brackets today based solely on the RPI and on KenPom's metric. Measuring offensive and defensive efficiency. And curiously, UCLA ended up being in both those brackets, both the RPI and KenPom brackets. Georgetown ended up being flipped with Wichita State in the RPI bracket just about perfectly from a 4 to a 7.
Right.
So it just seems to me that in some places the RPI this year really was emphasized, and in some places it really wasn't. And I really try to work that inconsistency into my decision-making as I'm doing this, and that actually worked out pretty well in terms of my accuracy. But in terms of trying to actually explain it, you know, the night of and the morning after makes it very difficult to actually, you know, accomplish anything kind of coherent.
Well, one thing that strikes me is that, and this is a rule, then the first four is that it's at-large teams that play in those 11 games. Chris, that rule, in my opinion, needs to be changed. If Wyoming's the last team in, and you and I both know they are, and UConn would have been the last team in.
City that has an automatic bid be in there as well. It looks like there might be some discussion about changing that in the future years, so we'll actually have to see if that actually happens or if, you know, inertia takes hold after, you know, March ends.
All right. Now when you look at some of the matchups, there are actually when you look at Vegas, and let's face it, I'm not, you know, I've never gambled a dime in my life, so, but it is mind-blowing how close these guys are on certain things. There are only two lower seeds that are in the favorite spot. Ironically, one's Texas over Butler, and the other one is Ohio State over VCU. Is this potentially a chalk tournament?
I don't think it is. I mean, I can understand those two picks for very legitimate basketball reasons.
Yes.
Texas has just a lot more talent than Butler does. VCU has had injury issues. They appear to be finally rounding into form by winning, you know, four games in 3 days to win the A-10. So that, to me, they're a little bit dangerous, and I would say probably a little bit more so than Ohio State, though I think D'Angelo Russell is going to have a lot to say about the Buckeyes' fate over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But really, I think there's a lot of very interesting upset possibilities, especially on 5-12 line, as there always are. I think that Stephen F. Austin could do it again against Utah, who might be a little bit overseeded.
Right.
Wofford always seems to play tough in this tournament. They're going to be in Jacksonville, in a place where they almost beat Wisconsin a couple of years ago.
Yep.
In a 4-13 matchup, and they're in a 5-12 matchup against Arkansas, a team that doesn't typically travel well. They've done better this year, but still not always great outside of Fayetteville.
And I'm not, and Chris, I'm not big on Arkansas. I'm not. I'll tell you another team I'm not big on. I'm not big on Georgia either.
Yeah, exactly. And you probably shouldn't be. Another team I will watch out for is Georgetown, because Georgetown having to go all the way west, having to play Eastern Washington in a Pacific time zone, Pacific Northwest situation against a team with the country's leading scorer, Tyler Harvey. That, especially with them being a little bit overseeded anyway, I think that's one that you can watch out for. I would even pay attention to Virginia and Belmont, because what happens if Virginia can't score? What happens if they hit one of those 5 or 6 minute droughts they're known to get in? That's a real potential danger spot for the Cavaliers.
Duke is the first number one seed since 2009 to not win the regular season title or the conference tournament title. Yet, they won at Virginia in their only meeting, and they won at Wisconsin in obviously what would be their only meeting as a non-conference game. Of the one seeds, give me a quick evaluation. Well, the other three one seeds. We don't need an evaluation on Kentucky, Chris. I think we've got a handle on that one.
Well, I honestly think that it's a shame that Wisconsin ends up potentially meeting Kentucky in the semifinal instead of the final, because, you know, that's the game everybody kind of wants to see at the end.
Yeah.
You're right about Duke, and in fact, that when you go back to 1979, that's only happened 11 total times that a team that has not won a championship of any sort has been a one seed.
Right.
And most of those were DePaul or Notre Dame back when we actually had real independents that weren't named NJIT.
Right, exactly.
So this is really bucking history here. I think that bracket actually sets up pretty well for Duke, because you have a lot of teams that are kind of, you know, out there, as I've already said about Georgetown. You know, it's kind of the show-me situation with the Hoyas and with Gonzaga. You got to really show me that you can actually go out there. And, of course, Duke is always in that situation, especially in a season where they lost a 3-14 game. So, you know, it's very possible that Duke could end up potentially losing to a team like Iowa State in the Elite Eight.
Right.
Because Iowa State is such a dangerous team to me. They're the most dangerous team in that entire half of the field.
They're the most dangerous team. They're the biggest wild card in this whole thing.
Yeah. And I think that's a good draw that they got, having Villanova and Duke as their 2-1 seeds, because, you know, Duke is always a team that seems to get exposed at this level, and they've been showing some kind of defensive issues. And you have Villanova, and you look at their profile, and yes, they won the Big East regular season and conference title. But when you look at the victories they have compared to the other two teams in that top three, Duke and Kentucky, it doesn't really match up. I mean, their best win was VCU. Mm-hmm. And that's nothing compared to what Kentucky and Duke have. So right. It's going to be interesting to see how tested they're going to be. And they play potentially Northern Iowa in the Sweet 16, who's my pick to actually get out of that pod with Louisville.
Interesting.
Because Louisville is not a very not as strong offensively this year as they have been. And Northern Iowa is a very strong team, both offensively and defensively. And even though they tend to play a slowdown game, if you speed them up a little bit, they're not going to be afraid of that. I think that Villanova could potentially fall to Northern Iowa in that Sweet 16 game. So that whole bracket could end up being completely blown apart by the regional semifinal, by the regional final.
Yet Villanova is one of those teams I think that actually can beat Kentucky if they had the great game. Here's the reason why. They're the one team in the field that can hit 15 threes in a game.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And that's the part that is discounted by too many people. Which team can actually hit 15 threes and shoot over them?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? That is a team that can do that. Who do you have in your final four just for Yaya's?
All right. Well, I haven't actually set this in stone yet.
Okay.
My picks are coming out tomorrow, but taking a first look. Because really, this is my first look with all the writing I've had to do the past the selection show. Obviously, Kentucky. Yeah. Obviously, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
I really am high on Wisconsin, and I think they're going to end up getting there too. So it'll be Kentucky and Wisconsin in one semifinal. I'm going to go with Northern Iowa out of the South, or out of the Midwest.
Okay.
Or out of the East, I should say, because it's Midwest-East.
Mm-hmm.
So Kentucky, Midwest.
Yep.
Wisconsin, West.
Yep.
Northern Iowa,
yep.
East. And out of the South, I'm going to go Iowa State.
Okay. All right. Hey, Chris, I know you've been busy beyond words. Thanks for carving out a few minutes for us today. I really appreciate it a lot.
Anytime, Steve. Thank you for being patient with me.
Patient? No, we're just thrilled you came on. Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome.
Chris Dobbertine, blogging thebrackets.com. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Forget March Madness! At Sunbury Motors Kia, there's nothing to be mad about. Because in the month of March, every pre-owned vehicle we have is on sale. It's March Happiness Month. Wanna see you. Of vehicles to choose from starting at just $39.88. Sunbury Motors Kia has what you want, and if not, we'll get it for you. Package that with the best interest rates available, and you'll be happy. So whether it's a car, truck, van, or SUV you're looking for, Sunbury Motors Kia is your one-stop shop, and you get the advantage of SMC's lowest price promise and Auto Club, where we pay you for the miles you drive. It's better than free. We pay you. So check us out at sunburymotors.com 24/7 or stop in for the March Happiness Sale at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf, where we've been selling more cars and satisfying more customers for 100 years.
Today's show is brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and the only thing we need to do, sir, is turn down the echo for me.
All righty,
there
how about
we go.
That?
I feel better now. I thought I survived pretty well there, actually.
You did well for a while, and then I realized I still had some pots up here and wasn't good on your end.
Yeah, it's all good here. 800-795-9565. The NCAA Wrestling Championships coming up later this week. We'll talk with Jeff Byers from St. Louis about that. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com, coming up as well later this week. Had a long talk with Adam out in Chicago. Mike DeCourcy saw him as well. And actually several talks with Mike Tirico. It was good to see Mike out there. Doing games. When I was talking with him and also with Don Fisher of Indiana and Matt LaPay of Wisconsin, we were talking about Penn State at this point. And I said, look, I said, you know, about Pat Chambers. And they did a great job
getting this team ready for the tournament. But it's amazing how one shot can suddenly energize and give you a confidence that maybe you didn't have before. And that one shot, of course, was that game-winning shot against Minnesota. That gave them that winning feeling, that sense of confidence, that, oh, man, wow, that was a big one to get over. And it allowed them to break through, where then they went out and they beat Nebraska, then they beat Iowa, and ran out of gas against Purdue. And a big reason why they ran out of gas against Purdue was actually the Wednesday game with Nebraska. They got up 16 on Nebraska, and if they had made 16-20 and then made 20-25, they could have pulled guys out in the last 4 minutes of the game and get them off their feet, and they would add more juice for Friday. But the problem was Nebraska, a team that was very close to quitting on their coach, a coach that was very close to quitting on their team, you know, a team that was always, I mean, you could just see them facially tilting. I mean, you felt like you're watching a ship list. And then all of a sudden they hit a shot, then another shot. Pettaway played hard all day. And they just ramming the ball to the bucket. And their best offense was the missed shot. They got so many offensive rebounds. And part of that was Penn State's rotations were actually so good that when a shot was missed, it left a small on a big. Well, Penn State makes this nice run in its confidence. But I said to the three of them, I said, look, I said, Pat Chambers is the right guy because this is a job at Penn State where you not only have to have a guy that's really good with X's and O's, and I think Pat's really good with X's and O's. Yeah, I've watched enough guys. I think I have a pretty good feel as to who's good with X's and O's and who isn't great at it. But you have to have an absolute passion for recruiting. You cannot be somebody who grudgingly goes out on the recruiting trail and recruits because I know I have to do it. It's part of the job. But, boy, I'll be able to coach him up once I get him there. You have to have somebody that really is passionate about recruiting because even though there's decent basketball talent across the state, you don't have high major Power 5 conference basketball talent between Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. Once in a while you do, but that's with an exception. You really have to hit suburban Philly, Chester, or the Philadelphia Catholic and Public Leagues to do this, which, of course, the competition there is steep with Temple, Villanova, and others, and into the D.C. area. So that's why he's right for this job. I said, you know, I looked at Don Fisher. I said, it's not like Indiana where you have that built-in tradition and a lot of really great high school basketball in that state. I said, when you finally had a lull at the end of the Mike Davis era, and, of course, Kelvin Sampson messed everything up, what happened? Who got good? Butler. Why did Butler get good? They were able to recruit the Indiana talent that then didn't want to go to Indiana. That made a huge difference.